You are listening to CEO Minutes, brought to you by Offutt Kerman, attorneys at law, your perfect legal partner.
Hi, I'm Greg Garev, head Sherpa at My Sherpa.
So tell us about My Sherpa and walk us through the founding of it, what you do for your clients, some background story on how you got to where you are.
Okay, that's a good question. So lots of parts to it. So we're business technology guides for our clients, and we're on a quest to help them reach peak success. And we do that by managing their IT systems, and that's what being a Sherpa means. And if you think of the best attorney you've ever witnessed in your firm, that's like a Sherpa attorney. But we're like the best IT management firm that our clients have witnessed, and that's why they hire us. And so peak success for our clients means that their systems are optimized, they're protected, they're secure, and that the employees that use those systems are empowered, meaning that if they're at work, they're at home, they're at clients, everything works, and they have access to the data they need to be productive in their business. And that's what we do. We enable those things by fully managing their IT.
How'd you pick the My Sherpa and tie it to the whole climbing industry or the climbing activity?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I have to give credit where credit's due. The My Sherpa moniker comes from my wife, Patricia. And when I was starting the business, prior to starting, we were thinking of, tech this and tech that. She's like, but that's not really who we are, right? We're more of guides, and we're more about leading people and showing them the way versus being a tech this or tech that. So we hopped on that bandwagon, and I think pretty early on. So My Sherpa really denotes that we are your guide, and we're there in a true partnership. We want to truly be there to understand and be by your side, because it's tough climbing Mount Everest, and it's tough growing a business. And if you can have somebody that helps you avoid the pitfalls and the chasms, that's 9/10 of it right there. Just watch where you're stepping. Here's an oopsie daisy. And same thing in business. If you can have somebody by your side and say, here, this is the right way to do it, or here's some choices, and they're all safe choices, that helps a business leader feel confident where they're heading. Versus we've seen other people not have that same level of advocacy, and they end up spending their money in the wrong direction, and they're stuck. They don't have any more money to climb any higher.
So you want to walk us through the founding. Back in 2001, you left the staffing industry and a staffing company.
Right.
And then just decided to start a IT company without any IT training necessarily, or official training or formal training.
Yeah, crazy, right? not necessarily a recommended way to start a business. You tend to want to bring a book of business with you or some institutional knowledge like that. But I think it really comes down to at my job in the staffing company, I was responsible for sales, but also enjoyed doing the technology piece. So I hired the IT firms, the outside third parties that would service our account. And I learned a lot of things that the not to do's. In doing so. So for example, one time I was in Boston and somebody from Pittsburgh called me and they said, hey, we still can't print. I'm like, well, that's odd, because weren't they there yesterday getting that all taken care of? And I thought when they left it was all working. He's like, yeah, it worked yesterday when he left, but this morning it's not working. And I'm like, okay, so I don't understand the problem. Why don't they just come get him back out there to fix the problem? He's like, well, we called. They said that person's on a 6-month assignment and can't come back out. And it's going to be X number of days or hours or whatever it is to get the problem solved. And I made a mental note of that, said, hey, you don't have to be great at technology necessarily up front, but you need to know what your customer's business is. And one lesson I learned there was if you solve a problem for somebody today and it goes sideways tomorrow, that's your number one priority, is to fix that, because it should have been fixed right the first time. So fix it right the first time is one of those lessons learned. And I kind of took some of those simple lessons learned and just applied them to my own company. When I started, it was just me. So, whether it took me an hour to do something or 8 hours, as long as I wasn't impacting the client's productivity, it really didn't matter. What mattered was that the problem was solved right the first time. And if there was an issue, that they got prompt service, which is easy when you only have one client when you start.
So how did you get your first client?
Oh, wow. Well, my first client, I think I was homeroom daddy at one of the schools here, one of the private schools in Wilmington. So I made friends with all the parents of all the kids in kindergarten. And invariably, there's a lot of business owners in that group, and started with some people's home businesses. We sent out some mailers to people's home businesses. So we started with those cottage industries, people working from their home. And, you know, you start with that relationship with people on a one-on-one basis. And that's how we got started. Now, my first corporate client was somebody that took a gamble on me. You know, they took a risk. And actually, that person was Kelly. Kelly was the operations manager for RT&E in Wilmington. And she hired me. And my first contract was $1,000 to do some consulting for them. And she went on a limb with her boss and said, "No, I know this guy, Greg, will do a great job. I know he's going to go above and beyond, and I trust him." And so she brought me in, and that $1,000 initial contract led into a monthly engagement, and that client was a client through and through until they, the client actually changed businesses. So.
And Kelly joined your firm.
And Kelly joined my firm, right?
And so, take us through like where you are today. So 18 employees. I don't know if you want to say revenue, but 18 employees and a lot of clients and continuing to grow and.
Yeah, we have 18 employees, and we typically grow at about a 15% clip each year. And a lot of that is because the types of accounts that we attract and are attracted to are the ones that are growing. If a company is growing, that means they're hiring new people, they're adding equipment, they're adding sophistication to their systems, they have the money to invest in new technology, which is all, those are all opportunities for us to maximize and run with. And so those are the kinds, and so a lot of our growth actually is just natural growth as my clients buy competition, they open up new offices in new regions. I mean, that's the best kind of growth there is. And then we do add a lot of new clients, really mostly through word of mouth and referrals and being part of the community, being good Samaritans in the community. And so people know us as go-givers, they know us as the people to go to. You know, we'll try to help any organization, whether they want to, in official capacity or not, we want to make sure that they get the right advice and that they're on the right path. And that's Boy Scout-like, it's also very Sherpa-like. You know, even if you see climbers that are struggling on the side of the mountain and they're not part of your expedition, you still want to help them. If you see them going down the wrong path, you still want to make sure that you can lend a helping hand to them. So where I can talk more about where we are, you know.
Yeah. So it was more of I was thinking of the along those lines, like how are you getting clients now? So I think you answered that's why I'm stumbling. But it's how important are relationships in your business, which I already answered that one. But what are your marketing efforts to get new clients now?
That's very good. That's a great question. So. All right, so what do we do to market our business? We do a lot of things to market our business. And when I think of marketing, I think of being top of mind. People aren't always looking to change IT services. So we want them to think about us. We want them to know what we do. We want them to consult with us if they have questions. And then when there's a time that maybe the way they're doing IT now or their businesses that are helping them, if they let them down or leave something to be desired, they'll pick up the phone and call us. And that's, we like getting those types of calls. Also, we do marketing events here in our office. Our goal is to have one event per month where we'll partner with other companies that have interesting things to talk about. So we had a LinkedIn professional talking about the power of LinkedIn. This person had written a book about it. Amazing read, but a brilliant mind. And she made it real simple as to how do you use LinkedIn to connect with other resources and to promote your business and brand. And so as a result of that, we had a packed room. We had like 35 people in here for that. And we're actually going to bring her back and pay her to help us more with our LinkedIn brand strategy.
So where does the entrepreneurial spirit come in that, getting the, let's say the nerve, but really having the balls to, leap from, working in the staffing company to start your own business and but having the, you know, the knowing the service value, customer service value, the relationship value. I mean, those are all kind of tied together. Where do you think that all comes from?
That's a good question. I think it comes from how I grew up, really. You know, we were just a regular middle class household, right? And probably right in the median of the whole thing. And you know, if I wanted something, I would have to work for it. We had one car for a lot of my time growing up, and you know, so it was a one car family and a small home. And so that's kind of how I grew up. So I used to, you know, I was a newspaper person. I'd deliver the paper in the afternoons. That was one way. I cut lawns. And as I got older, I would do babysitting jobs. I would also, I was a rent-a-kid for a bank. A bank had a program called Rent-a-Kid. So, you know, you can only imagine you show up at the people's house and they have these off-end projects like cleaning up the backyard after the winter and their dogs. And nobody had touched it for the winter, so, you know, right?
What did your parents do?
My dad was a middle manager at Xerox Corporation, and my mom was a teacher and a counselor in the public schools.
So, and you know, similar, you know, backgrounds, like I mowed lawns, I worked at campgrounds, but my parents were not entrepreneurial, and so, you know, I sold eggs. My dad ended up killing all my chickens, which I didn't know was going to happen.
So, Dad, what did
I know about my egg business? But I'm always fascinated with the having the balls to make the jump. You know, so I think that's I admire that, you know, that someone really has a nerve and then successful at it, you know, figuring it out.
Well, thanks. I mean, to some degree. I think there's always a bit of naivete for people starting their first business because they don't know what they don't know. There's that vision they have in their mind of what it could look like and what they want it to be, and they probably have a record. I know I was successful at a number of things that I always realized if I applied myself and tried hard, I would do okay. You know, I've never abjectly failed when I tried, or if I did, it was for the better, and I learned from that. So. But yeah, there is a risk. I mean, to do what I did, you need to have some money stored away, right? There's a burn rate there. Mm-hmm. So that's not for everybody. But I think, you know, in this day and age, there's so many resources for people who want to start a business, whether it's through SCORE or other types of government partnerships in town or for the state, that people can get the help and they can get the mentoring they need to get a start in business and get the books right for the first time and get a leg up. So that's.
But what were some of the challenges and barriers that you experienced? I know reading, you know, 2008, you know, was probably a barrier you had to get through, you know, that your business from 2001 to 2008 looked one way and then perhaps looked a little bit different after that. You know, to expand on.
Yeah, I mean, so some barriers we had when I originally started the company, it was out of my home in the basement, right? So there are some barriers to bringing in corporate clients because, you know, where's your office? And, you know, we have a P.O. box. And so you're not going to be able to wow them with how things look necessarily. So you have to have a good presentation and an exterior look to you. And then one of our turning points in the business was getting our first office space. And that was fantastic because that was a springboard to then be able to bring in more larger clients. We actually brought in Christiana Care as a client and hosted some important systems for them. And we would have a conference table like this, and it was, you know, we'd have three Sherpas and the rest was Christiana Care people. So, you know, we would have never have been able to land that business without that turning point of having an office. And ask me that question again.
Oh, so, you know, from 2001, 2008,
oh, right.
You're certainly growing. What did you experience at the recession or any hiccups and how did you get through them and any challenges through that period?
You know, there's an element to when you're growing your business that you're so focused on the delivering that quality of service and staying close to your customers that we heard a lot of our customers having pain where they would describe the feeling of the recession as bumping along the bottom is how they would describe it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't pay much attention to it other than recognizing that they were in pain. Some of them asked for concessions in pricing, and of course we would comply with that to help them out. So we still grew in that that 2008 piece, maybe not as fast, but at the end of the day, we're in a really good industry. So I can count my lucky blessings that we're in IT services, because people would say, well, I get it, you know, like, you may not need this, and you may not need the water cooler service, and you may not have so many lunches brought in, but at the end of the day, your computer still needs to work. So you're kind of lucky in that respect, Greg, that people really still need your services. So it was very important then, and it's even more important now as things are becoming more and more scattered with applications moving to the cloud and mobile devices and, you know, Internet of Things, everything, cars are driving themselves, everything's just on fast forward. So our services are even more relevant now as customers try to tie everything together.
When I have a question about virtual assistants. That was one of the questions you were asked in one of the other interviews. So how do you see the future of Internet of Things or virtual assistants? I was reading someplace there was a guy in Japan where maybe virtual assistants and robotics are a little further along than what we're experiencing, but he was in love with he actually tells his virtual assistant, I love you, you know. So where do you think that's all headed in the future?
That's a billion-dollar question or trillion-dollar question. Well, I'll give you an example. I think as more things move to the cloud, so for example, we moved our email from on-premise Microsoft Exchange server to the Microsoft 365 cloud, and we did that before we moved our offices, so we had to move less things. It was a smart thing to do. And like, I have a flight later this afternoon, and it just so it happens it has the intelligence built in. It says, hey, you have a flight coming up, and you know, we're reminding you, you might want to check in. And that's a service that Microsoft is somehow pulling that data out of our calendars and using it to help us stay abreast. So it was Microsoft telling me I have this flight, not the airline that we're using. So that's one virtual assistant. I think that, you know, anything that people can use to control their time and place, right? So now you can time shift with things that you watch or things that you do. You can place shift with video and be in two places at once, having on-demand video. I think we're gonna see more of those types of personalized services. And I think everything down to medicine is gonna be more personal, more customized to your needs, and the algorithms will just get smarter and smarter. So hopefully artificial intelligence makes us healthier, maybe a little smarter, but you know, the flip side is we don't want to get too dependent on that, where we get lazy and you know, have to use a calculator for everything. So,
earlier, described your employees as Sherpas, and then just the cloud reference reminded me of even the cloud, you can make a case for, climbing into the clouds and helping people, through that.
Right.
But then also calling your employees Sherpas. So you want to talk about the culture, and then I'll ask about the whole branding thing, where everyone seems to be carrying your brand for you, which, for a small business, it's awesome. Maybe it has something to do with your success. But so we want to talk about the culture first and the whole Sherpa concept.
Well, thanks. I mean, we're all Sherpas. I just happen to have the title of head Sherpa, but we're all part of that, of a team. And that's the real critical part with what we do, is that we help our customers with the procurement of what they're doing, their planning, the help desk and support to keep their employees working, as well as the administration of the systems, keeping things up to date and all that. So there's a lot of collaboration internally, and you have to be on the same team. And if you think of climbing up Mount Everest, the original Sherpa, Tenzing Norgay, helped Sir Edmund Hillary ascend to the summit in 1953. But it wasn't just Tenzing, there was a lot of other Sherpas along with that trip. And so it's really about, it's not about title or position in the company, it's really about our core value of being a guide, taking ownership of the problem, doing what you promise, having that follow through. And those are things that typically lack in our industry because of bright, shiny objects. So it's a team approach, and that's why we keep it to Sherpas and that metaphor of helping our clients reach peak success. An interesting tidbit, though, was that Sir Edmund had been trying to do this for a while, and this the summit in 1953 wasn't his first go at it. In fact, a little bit of history, people started trying to summit Everest, which is 29,035 feet, back in 1921. And it wasn't until 1953 that they actually were successful, but it also wasn't the first time. So you have to have the right Sherpa team. And so teamwork is really what Sherpa is all about. And we turn it into a verb where we Sherpify our clients' technology. We Sherpify their experience. So it's really about the experience. And then earlier we talked about, well, how did you get your name? And you know, we're not about IT per se. We're about people, helping people, people helping others overcome problems, obstacles, and getting to the success where they want to be. So the analogy to climbing suits itself really well, and that's why we keep the Sherpa name. And I want all of my employees to feel like Sherpas and to know what a Sherpa is like and to have read the books about being a Sherpa, so they know that it's not always a piece of cake. It's challenging work and it's not easy, and we're there to serve the client. It's not the other way around, right? We're on the client's expedition, they're not on our expedition. And that's something that gets lost in translation, I think, with a lot of service companies. If they don't keep that focus and the eye on the prize of who their customer is and what their purpose is, sometimes the message gets diluted. And here it should never be diluted, because we know who the customers are, we know our job is to help them be successful, and we know how to do that is through the relationship and close communications with them.
That's a great answer. Sounds like a fun place to work.
We try.
So, I mentioned before, you know, just reading through a bunch of some of the press, that it seems like almost every article, they're carrying your brand of, you know, the Sherpa, climbing the cloud, climbing into the cloud, carrying the whole treacherous trek through articles. You know, it was kind of like, I thought it was like, wow, they're you know, advertising your brand for you, you know, versus just an article about you, right, and a company. I mean, that's not as interesting as the stuff I read, how they were, almost all of them were bringing in, your brand into the, subtly into the article.
So. Well, it's cool to be a Sherpa, right? Everybody wants to be a Sherpa, right? Because you're recognized as being the best, and you're recognized as being someone that's very helpful. And so it's something to strive for and aspire to. And so people always want to, it's fun to be a Sherpa. It's neat. It's a neat concept.
What do you attribute, that even that the press or, other outside organizations kind of glom onto the brand and are using the language you're using back in articles?
I think it's because it's fun, right? They get it, right? So there's two types of people. It's the people that don't get it. Maybe they don't know who Sir Edmund was or the story of Tenzing Norgay, and they have to ask, and that's okay. We can explain that to them. And there's the other people who go, I love your brand, I love your name, I love what you've done, I totally get it. You guys are the guides that take your clients on the journey to their, to their vision quest and get the job done, and you cover all the bases and all those things. So they actually can sell my company better than I can, because they just get that picture, they get the vision. And so it's fun for them, I've had customers go, my Sherpa's here, you get that kind of welcome, and it just is, that's just an awesome thing, and you play on that, so it's a fun play, and clients like to have fun. I mean, that's one thing is, if I walk in the door to a client, I want them to be happy to see me, and that I can bring some joy into the, make things better than when I left it, like a Boy Scout would with their campsite. So, I enjoy being with clients, and I enjoy being able to be energized by being around the clients, and hopefully I leave some of that energy with them when I walk out the door.
Awesome. So we talked a little earlier, about what client size is typical. I mean, so I guess the question about retaining your clients. So as you're being an outsourced service, there's a certain level where a client might say, well, we can do that better in-house or cheaper. And so what's the response to, the reason they shouldn't do that? How do you keep retain your clients as they grow? I guess that's a better question.
Or what's the benefit of you staying as their
Your pitch of keeping a client engaged with you as they grow, and thinking that they could do it better in the house.
So that's an interesting question, and it doesn't come up as much as you may think. Even though my clients do grow pretty substantially, you know, there's the marketing piece of who we are and what we do, and there's the sales piece of how great we are and what we're going to do for them results-wise and how they're going to we're going to impact their business. But at the end of the day, if we're positively impacting their business and we're a key component of their success story and their growth story, and we've also been there thick and thin. So it's not all about when things are rosy and the sky is, you know, it's a warm 55 degrees and it's sunny out and there's no wind. You know, it's about when you're on the side of the mountain and the wind's blowing at 130 miles an hour, it's minus 65 degrees, you think you're gonna get blown off the face of the earth, and your Sherpa team's still sticking with you, and when the storm passes, you know, everybody's stronger because of it. And that's it, that's the testimony, the proof is in the pudding. So if you, you know, in like any business, if you're not performing and you're not earning your keep, then there's a good likelihood there people would look to the outside or some other alternatives to solve their problems. But if you're every day you come to work, you know who, you know what your mission is, who your customers are, what you're trying to do for them, that's a compelling reason to keep you. And then I think sometimes it becomes the question of, well, what are you doing for me, right? Things work pretty well, we don't have any fires. And that's really a case where you can remind them of maybe how things were, or talk about some of the things that we've been able to accomplish, and really quantify those things is very helpful. And talk about that winning formula. And really what people ultimately want to do is they want to make sure they're in control of their spend. If they envision that they're going to triple their size of their business, they don't necessarily want to think that they got to triple their budget for IT. And so having that conversation and showing them what it would look like and being a good planning partner with them gives them the confidence to know that you're in it for them and not for, you're not doing it for just the money, you know. And then they realize that it's really reaffirming that partnership. And I think that if you're doing a good job sitting with the clients on a periodic basis, you have a level of trust and openness that you can overcome many obstacles. We have a client in Arlington, and they came to us and they said, you know, we're at the stage where we really think we need someone on site. And we agree, you know, it's getting, you started with us with 20 people and now you're at 100 and something people. And it is hard for us to service you. It's a 4-hour drive, you know, pending traffic. So they actually, we help them bring in another IT company that does the feet on the ground there, but we do all the strategic and manage their systems and still do the help desk for them. And that's worked out. It's worked out well. We have, could we feel threatened? Possibly, but we do such a good job that they're confident and comfortable keeping us in doing the role that we do. And we are confident and comfortable in the customer's relationship with us that they're not gonna throw us out the door and switch services. Although you gotta perform, right? So if we were to stop performing, I would expect them to throw us out the door, so.
Yeah, from my standpoint too, I always look for the partnership. You know, I'm not looking for someone to always be selling me on something else, but you know, partnering to make me feel like, you know, they've got your back, and you know, they're not just to make money off of us, or you know, to charge us more for something. But save us money where they can save us money. I mean, that resonates well. The partnership part resonates, I think, you know, certainly across the business, and that's how I look at finding partners. So what keeps you up at night?
Let's see. What keeps us up at night?
Besides your 12-year-old daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
You sleep good at night.
Yeah, I sleep well at night. You know, we're sometimes it's I don't really have. I mean, it's not like I don't have concerns like every other business owner, but we don't have cash calls. You know, where we're worried about payroll, that's a thing long ago. You know, so I guess my biggest concern is, you know, maybe making sure that I stay educated and informed enough to continue to be a great leader for the organization, that I can take it to the next level. Because it's not the same thing growing the business to the next level. It's a different looking animal, and things that worked to get to where we are today aren't gonna get us to the next place. So basically you're jumping curves, right? We're here and we're on this curve and we see that there's a downside coming and we gotta get to this next curve. And it's, how do you make that jump and not fall back onto the last curve? And that's, I guess, if I were to say keeps me up at night, is because it's an unknown, it's the next thing. But you know, hey, everybody who's in business is doing it, they gotta jump the curves. And so we're going to hit the next curve and jump it. Yeah, that's
so
that's how.
What do you think that looks like in the future? The next curve, the next paradigm shift. You know, what do you think that is?
Well, I see security and compliance are obviously two things that are going to become more and more important. People to date have been kind of resigned in wanting to spend money and invest in it. They see it as another cost center, but I think they're also starting to realize that hey, it's not going away. We're going to have to make budgets for these things, and we're going to have to do them, because at some point they're not going to be able to keep their client base, because their clients are going to demand more as far as, you know, what's your business disaster recovery strategy, and show me your security plan and what you're doing to make sure that our relationship and our data stays secure. And these are requirements that are coming down from larger companies down to the mid market and then back down to the smaller vendors. So you know, it's just something you're going to have to do. And I think, too, many industries are putting more regulations in place. So you have to be compliant with these things. And otherwise, you know, your business isn't secure and you're a risk to do business with. And, you know, it's hard enough out there to get new business. And if you're not doing the right things and being able to say you have all your I's dotted, your T's crossed, your boxes checked, and legitimately have invested the time, resources, and energy to do that, it's going to be hard for you. You're just not going to have the kinds of clients that you would like to attract. So you just have to do it. So we see that as an opportunity to grow our marketplace, to engage in different markets and accounts, to add some additional services and staff and expertise. But it's a process because it's so new to everybody. You just don't just boot it up and fire and go. You have to learn and try and be measured in what you do. Otherwise, you're probably going to have problems launching new things.
It would be the K2.
Yes, exactly, right. Right, so yes. So we have the same challenges our customers do.
So do you think of anything else I didn't ask or you want to add?
Let's see.
Michelle?
About, you know, why people work here. On your notes, it was talking about the community or what we do for the community, maybe.
Yeah, how about that? That's a great question. Yeah, give back to the community, and because I think I did ask you did answer about the culture and about why working here, I believe. Unless you want to expand on that.
Yeah, we could talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
I mean, people want to come to work for my Sherpa because they want to be part of something that's successful. They want to be part of something that's bigger than themselves. But they also want to contribute, right? They have their traits and skills and their motivation and drive, and they want to be able to apply those things in a manner that makes an impact and can move an organization forward. So that's why it's a great place to work, is because we're big enough that we have some really cool challenges technology-wise with some larger clients, but we're small enough where someone that has the right attitude and skills and traits can come in here and really make a big difference for our customer as well as my Sherpa's organization. And you know, when you're a company, a small company, or any size company for that matter, leadership matters, right? So you want to grow leaders within the company. And so leaders want it. You know, if you have these skills and you want to be a leader, we're a great place to hang your hat. Not to mention, we're a fun place to work. We're a great environment and good people. So that's why, you know, that's why we attract good talent, great talent.
And then we talked about your community involvement. You want to talk about some of the projects and how you stay involved with the community and how you give back?
Yeah, I mean, community involvement's everything for us. I feel really fortunate to be in the Wilmington, Delaware business community. It's a tight-knit community. A lot of people will say, well, you know, it's the Delaware way, and I, you know, blah, blah, but I love the Delaware way. I like the fact that I have a reputation of trying to help others. I like the people that I meet at the chamber events and all that. That's how I was introduced to your firm, through associates of your firm. So I think that's great. And but the way we give back, there's three core things that we do, all focused really around helping children and children's causes. The number one thing that we do is every quarter we shop and cook for the Ronald McDonald House. We serve over 100 dinners each quarter to families that are at the Ronald McDonald House with their kids across the street at AI DuPont Hospital for Children. And you know, these people are in a real stressful place. You know, they're their kid could be in some serious trouble, and they're away from home, away from family and friends, they're staying in a foreign place. So we try to make it as hospitable as possible to make sure that people feel cared for and that we create an environment for them that feels like home. So that's one thing we do, and that's a great team building exercise too. We have really cool aprons that we wear, the I'm with Tenzing apron, which is neat. And it's a great opportunity for us to all work together in some other capacity besides IT as a team and cook the dinners. And what's also really nice is that we get compliments on how good the food is. So they look forward to when we come in because they know we do a banging job. And I know we do a banging job because we don't get to eat it, obviously, but I'm like, well, I wish I was here tonight eating this food. So we feel good about that. We're also very active in the Children's Fund. And that is a race that we participate in every year. And we usually have the most participants coming and helps raise money for kids here in the local area, providing food to them so they can be productive in school and help them, you know, some of the underprivileged kids get ahead. And so that's a fun event that we do every year and see a lot of value in that help. It makes us feel good that we're helping. And the third thing that we do is we also work with the Delaware Children's Museum. We've helped them get started up and got computers donated for them when they had their initial startup. And we've helped them when times were a little bit lean, like with the recession, and providing services for them so they could continue going. And so everything about the children, that's where we've hung our hats. And we're a family-oriented company, so that makes a lot of sense to me why that's attractive to us.
That's awesome. We supported a Horizon Day Camp, is a camp for kids with cancer and their families. So it actually provides the families a chance to be on their own while their kids are, safe at a camp and outdoors. And there's doctors there, and any issue that might come up there, they can be handled. But the advantage is the parents get to, have some time alone.
Which is priceless.
Yeah, to
hear. To know your kids safe and having a good time, and the parents can.
They can try to be a normal family
in
some way, and even the siblings get to go to the camp too. So the children with cancer plus their siblings get to go, and then mom and dad get to do some other things. So that was a fascinating hearing the stories of the impact that stuff like that makes on people. So well, this is great.
Thank you.
You've got some other things you want to throw out there, we can do it.
I'm good. I think, that's a lot of A footage or whatever you want. A-roll.
That is
A-roll. A-roll, baby.
Definitely A-roll. Yeah,
cool. This has been CEO Minutes, brought to you by Offit Kerman, attorneys at law, your perfect legal partner. For more information and to tell your entrepreneurial story, visit us on the web at ceominutes.com.